About various aspects of Hilchos Pesach, and there's a lot to talk about. And this is why we are told that Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, already 30 days before the holiday of Pesach, we have an obligation to already be Shalom Midorshim Hilchos HaChag. We have an obligation to already begin looking into and understanding all of the halachas that we have to know that pertain to the particular Yontif. As we know, this coming Thursday evening, we are going to do Bedikas Chametz. And a lot of the preliminary aspects of Bedikas Chametz, I'm sure we all know, but what I want to talk about is some things that we probably might not be aware of. Let's begin with saying a bracha of Shehecheyanu on the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. Now everybody's going to look at me and say, what do you mean? We don't make a bracha of Shehecheyanu on Bedikas Chametz. And the question is, why not? The Torah in Siman Tav Lamed Beis Hilchos Pesach wonders why that should be the case. Why do we not recite a Shehecheyanu the same way we recite a Shehecheyanu every time, once a year when we go into the sukkah, once a year when we shake the lulav, once a year when we blow the shofar, we recite a Shehecheyanu. So once a year when we fulfill our obligation of the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, we should also recite a Shehecheyanu the same way we would do so for any other mitzvah. This is a very important question. And in fact, it is unclear as to why we do not. The Rishonim have a discussion as to why that should be the case. So some say, well, the reason why is because, as we know, for those who might be going away for Pesach, and you're going away already on Tuesday or Wednesday, so you're not going to be around on Thursday evening, or, for that matter, if you're already going away from your home 2 weeks before Pesach, or a month before Pesach, and you have no intention of coming back to your home before Pesach, before the Yom Tov itself, so the halacha dictates that one has to perform a Bedikas Chametz way in advance. The last time you're going to be in your house before Pesach, even a few months before, you have to go and check your house and perform a Bedikas Chametz. And therefore, the Rishonim say, how could a person say, Shehecheyanu v'kiyimanu v'hegiyanu lazman hazeh, to this moment, if it's not on any given day that you have to recite the bracha on the Bedikas Chametz? There are some people who are going to perform it on Thursday evening. Some people are going to do it on Thursday morning before they go to Mexico. Some people are going to do it a month ago. Some people 2 months ago. So how do you say v'kiyimanu v'hegiyanu lazman hazeh if it's not put on any calendaric date specifically? So that's the first reason that the Rishonim give. The Torah quotes from his father that, no, his father was the Rush, and he says the reason why we do not recite a Shehecheyanu on the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz is because, well, after all, we do recite a Shehecheyanu on the Yom Tov of Pesach, and Bedikas Chametz is just in preparation for the holiday itself. So you're covered. Once you say the Shehecheyanu on the holiday itself, that covers all the preparation that was done as well, and therefore Bedikas Chametz is already covered with the bracha that we're going to recite on the night of the Seder. There are many other suggestions given, but one of them, which I thought was very strange, was what the Rishonim quote in the name of Rabbeinu Peretz, that the reason we do not recite a Shehecheyanu is because Shehecheyanu is something we're supposed to say when we're very excited. We have an opportunity once a year to blow shofar, an opportunity once a year to shake the lulav, to do all sorts of mitzvahs. We recite a Shehecheyanu, we're so excited. But who's excited about Bedikas Chametz? That means we're going to have to throw out all the cookies, all the crackers in our house. And for some people, that's a big loss. For some people, you're throwing out lots of different items in your house. And we're not so excited about that. Therefore, he says, we cannot say with a whole heart, Shehecheyanu v'kiyimanu v'hegiyanu lazman hazeh, I'm so excited to have this opportunity to perform the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, Bi'ur Chametz, I'm not so excited. It's not that exciting. After all, I have to dispose of a lot of very important items that are found throughout my property and throughout my house. So this is a discussion that the Rishonim have. Basically, the opinion of most of the poskim is that we do not recite a Shehecheyanu when we perform the mitzvah. And this is why in Shulchan Aruch we do not have the practice quoted at all. And I did see some Svardusha Gedolim say that perhaps one should do is, being that it's a Machlokas HaRishonim, whether or not we do recite a Shehecheyanu, and it's not clear what the reason is why we do not. There are all sorts of suggestions, but it's not clear which one is the correct one. So there are some who say the same way on Rosh Hashanah, when we have a suffix, on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, we have a suffix about whether or not we should recite a Shehecheyanu. What do? We take a new fruit, we put on a new item of clothing, something of that nature, we recite a Shehecheyanu, which is really covered by the new item. So some suggest you should do the same thing on the night of Bedikas Chametz. Buy a new suit, put it on, take a new fruit or something of that nature, and recite a Shehecheyanu. Now, reciting Shehecheyanu on a new fruit is not so simple in our community, because generally nowadays it's not that the fruits are so seasonal. We have fruits that are available throughout the year. It's not so often that we'll find a fruit that was totally unavailable at some point in the year, and now we're so excited that it comes back into season. So nowadays, making a Shehecheyanu on a fruit is not so simple. I think the general practice all over the world is that we do not recite a Shehecheyanu on Bedikas Chametz. We don't try to go out of our way to find a new fruit or to put on a new suit. We just go about and perform our mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz without reciting a Shehecheyanu. We do have a practice when it comes to Bedikas Chametz, and this is what we're going to spend most of the time on tonight. There is a practice that we put out 10 pieces of bread before we perform mitzvah bedikas chametz. And that's what I want to talk about this evening. What's that all about? So there are those who say, the Ravid and other Rishonim say, this is a minhag nashim. So what does it mean, a minhag nashim? It means sometimes we have, women are cleaning for Pesach, sometimes women are getting the house ready, and they come up with all sorts of chumers and all different kinds of things. Not always is everything so based on halacha. Sometimes they come up with chumers that might not be necessary. They say a story about the wife of one of the Belzer Rebbes, the Sar Shalom of Belz, that she came home, he came home one night from shul right before Pesach, and he sees his wife is kashering the keys to the house. He says to her, what are you kashering the keys? What is this? You know, in Shulchan Aruch it says you don't have to do that. So she said, with your Shulchan Aruch and with all your things, we're going to end up eating chametz on Pesach. So sometimes the women take upon themselves chumers that might not be me'ikar adin necessary. We shouldn't make fun of them. They're all very beautiful, but this is a question. Over here, putting out the 10 pieces of chametz, where does this come from? So some Rishonim say it doesn't come from anywhere. It doesn't come from anywhere. It has no source. It doesn't make any sense. And this is something that is not founded at all. So if you look in the Shibalei Haleket, lived in the 1300s, if you look on the first source on the source sheet, we have here already a discussion about whether or not this is the proper thing to do. So let's read it together. Matzasi b'tshuvas ha-Gaonim. He says that the Gaonim have already written, the Gaonim were in the period before the Rishonim. So the Gaonim, it's a very early source, right after the Gemara. K'shemevarech al habir, eno choshesheim eno motzei chametz. What's the crux of the issue? The problem is, I'm going to do a bedikas chametz, I'm going to search around my whole house, and our family did such a good job cleaning up the house beforehand that there's nothing to look for anymore. So there's nothing left. So why am I making a bracha? So we're concerned maybe it's going to be a bracha levatela. Says the Shibalei Haleket, no. Matzasi b'tshuvas ha-Gaonim k'shemevarech al-habir, when I make the bracha by bedikas chametz, eino choshesh emeinu motzei chametz. You don't have to worry that maybe I'm not going to find anything and what's going to be with my bracha. Shemikal makom nechshav kibir masha mechazer acharav levaro v'chayiv levarech. Right now, what my obligation is to check around my house. Have I performed my obligation? Yes. My obligation is not to find something. My obligation is to look around the house and see if I find anything. If I happen to come up with nothing, so good. But I still have performed my obligation, and therefore, there's nothing to be concerned about a bracha levatela. Aval, the Shibalei Haleket writes, Achi Rabbeinu Binyamin Kasa, my brother, Rab Binyamin, disagreed, and he said, no, Kivan Shah bracha ala bedika, v'ikar abedika hu abir. We know that bedikas chametz is part of a two-part mitzvah. Number one, you check for the chametz. Number two, you burn the chametz on Erev Pesach. So he says, if you're not going to find anything in the bedika, then you're going to have nothing to burn the next morning. So how can you recite a bracha on the bedikas chametz if ultimately you're going to find nothing and you're going to have nothing to burn the next day? And therefore, this was already the beginnings of a discussion about whether or not we should do something to make sure we never get involved in this issue of reciting a bracha on the bedikas chametz and coming up with nothing as we search throughout our home. So the Agra talks about this as well, there in Shulchan Aruch Siman Taf Lamed Beis, and he says, well, the Bi'ur HaGra is the Vilna Gaon, he has his commentary in the bottom of Shulchan Aruch, and he says that he believes that one does not have to put out the 10 pieces of chametz, and he proves it from the following Gemara. Let's look at number Beis. The Gemara has a Maseches Psachim Daf Yud Amud Beis, a strange story. You have a story about somebody who, for some reason, wasn't around on Thursday evening, they're in the hospital, they don't have any family members to do a bedikas chametz for them. It's totally not on their minds, and it turns out that they didn't have a chance to do it. Now they come home after Thursday evening. So says the Gemara, "V'chachamim omrim lo badak arla arba aser." Let's say a person is in the hospital; they didn't have a chance to do bedikas chametz, and nobody did it on their behalf. Now they get discharged from the hospital erev Pesach in the morning, and they realize, "I forgot to do bedikas chametz last night. I was so busy in the hospital, I didn't take care of what I was supposed to." Yivdok Barba Aser, no problem. You should do the bedikas chametz on Erev Pesach itself. You missed your opportunity Thursday night, no problem, do it Friday morning. Lo Badak Barba Aser, let's say you have somebody who not only is in the hospital on Thursday night, not only on Friday morning, they only get out the first day of Chol HaMoed. So what do I do then? Yivdok Ketoch HaMoed. You should do bedikas chametz on Chol HaMoed itself. Lo Badak Ketoch HaMoed, let's say I'm in the hospital the whole Pesach and I miss everything. And now I get out afterward. Yivdok la'achar amoid, says the Gemara, you should check afterward. Now the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam both quote this halacha. The Shulchan Aruch is in Siman Taf Lamed Hei, and the Rambam is in Hilchos Chametz Matzah Paragimel Halacha Vav. Both of them quote this halacha, that if you miss the opportunity to do the bedikas chametz when you're supposed to do it, so you do it at the first time that you have a chance to do so. Yet, they add that not only should you perform the mitzvah of bedikas chametz at a later date, you should even recite a bracha at the later date. Now, you should even recite a bracha, says the Vilna Gaon, how can you recite a bracha? if you're concerned that maybe you're not going to find anything, and the only reason you're allowed to recite a bracha this Thursday night is because you put out the 10 pieces, that's the only rationale that you have to make the bracha, because maybe you won't find anything, what's going to be? Bracha levatala, says the Vilna Gaon. Doesn't the Gemara say over here, what if on Pesach itself, I realized that I didn't do a bedikas chametz, you should go and recite a bracha on Pesach, check your whole house, says the Vilna Gaon. How can you make a bracha? You can't put out chametz on Pesach. Everybody will agree to that. So you're performing a bedikas chametz in your house when you really might not find anything, says the Vilna Gaon, and yet you're allowed to recite a bracha. Don't you see from here that the 10 pieces of chametz are not necessary? It's an amazingly brilliant proof that he brings. But I think it's a very compelling one. So this is the machlokas harishonim, and this is the way the Vilna Gaon tries to set up that he feels we do not have to. However, as we know, the minig that the Rama quotes is that we all do it anyway. We put out the 10 pieces of chametz. Look at the Rama, Siman Taf Lamed Beis, number Gimel here. The Rama says, "V'noagin lahaniach pesisei hachametz b'makom sheyimtzam habodek." Our practice is that we put out the 10 pieces of chametz in a place where somebody can find them. Kidei shelo tehei berchasu levatala. In order that I shouldn't come across that maybe I'm reciting a bracha levatala, because who knows? Maybe I'm going to check my whole house and not come up with anything, and therefore we have to be concerned. So that's why the Rama says we have to make sure that we put out 10 pieces of chametz. Mihu, however, he qualifies the statement and he says, let's say I do not have any bread left in my house, I have nothing to put out. Now it comes Thursday night, I'm ready to do the bedikas chametz and I don't have anything to put out. So somebody showed me the other day, very important, the handy 10 pieces of chametz that they sell in the store. This way we won't, chalila, have the problem of not having 10 pieces in our house to put out. But for most of us that probably do not use that and put 10 pieces of chametz in our own little bags. So what happens if I come to my house and we were so organized, we already got rid of all of our chametz, I come, leil bedikas chametz, I have nothing to put out, says the Rama, miu, im lo nason lo ikev, if I don't have anything to put out, so do your bedikas chametz anyway. Shadaz kala de mishas habracha levar im nimtza, because really, the way we paskin, says the Rama, is meikar adin, when you make the bracha on the bedikas chametz, you're really making the bracha with the kavana, that if I find anything, I'm going to burn it. The bracha is really on the search, it's not on the finding itself. And therefore he says that, if it turns out that I don't have anything to put out, I can go ahead and do my bedikas chametz anyway, like the Vilna Gaon proves from the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim, that if you have to do a bedikas chametz on Pesach itself, you're also allowed to make a bracha, and therefore the Vilna Gaon proves that really, me'ikar adin, this is not so necessary, but our practice is that we do it nonetheless. Now, the Shari Tshuva, it's worth mentioning a very important point that the Shari Tshuva makes, and that is when we put out the 10 pieces of chametz, number one, you should write down where you're putting them, because what if the person doesn't end up finding them? So at least somebody should know where they are, and therefore you'll be able to get it before Pesach begins. And number two, says the Shari Tshuva, another very important thing is, if you're going to put out the 10 pieces of chametz, you should put out less than a kezias in each one. Because less than a kezias, you don't violate the Isur Daraisa of Bayira Bayimatze, of not having any chametz in your property. If you put out a whole piece of bread in each place, and you can have 10 big pieces of bread all around the house, and ultimately you don't end up finding one of them, then you might come to violate the halacha of not having chametz in your property. If all you put out in the first place was a tiny little piece, a mashahu of bread, and you put it in a bag somewhere and you hit it and then you don't find it, so it's not so bad. If it's less than a kezayit, it's not so bad. And therefore the Shari Tshuva says, we should try our best, even if we put out the 10 pieces, they should be very small pieces, they should not be big enough. Now certainly, for those who are going away for Pesach, and you're not going to be around on Thursday night to perform the bedika at the proper time, but you have to do it earlier, well, we know that the practice is when you do an earlier bedikah, you do not recite a bracha. So certainly, when you're not reciting a bracha and you're doing the bedikas chametz earlier, you certainly don't have to put out the pieces of bread. Why? Because let's not forget where the halacha started. The whole reason to put out the pieces is not to have a bracha lebatala. If you're not making a bracha anyway because you're doing a bedikah a few days earlier, then there's nothing to put out the bread for. So that's just a practicality to keep in mind. There's no reason to bother yourself and put the pieces out if you're not going to recite a bracha anyway. To the number 10. I'm sure there is. You're asking the wrong guy, though. I don't know. Yeah? Well, look, Rabbi Billitz, Jerusha, for those who are here on Shabbos, seem to say that Purim and Pesach are all the same, something of that nature. So maybe there's some significance, 10 sons of Haman. I don't know. He did point out, actually, that the whole story of Purim actually took place on Pesach. So maybe you're not so far off. I don't know. Maybe you're not so far off. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm sure those who deal with numbers know a lot better than I do. Now, there's a tremendous chiddush that's written by Rav Dov Beresh Weinfeld, who was the Chibina Rav. He wrote the Shalos HaTshuvos Dovid Meisharim. He was a survivor of the Holocaust of the Shoah. And he wrote such a brilliant chiddush. You know, everything I see from him is just brilliant. He was such a brilliant man. We said over in one of the shiurim the other week, I forgot which one it was, but one of the shiurim I mentioned that if his son-in-law is in his in-law's house, the in-laws are eating gebraks and he's not, so what are you supposed to do? So he brought a proof from like totally from outer space. He's just he's a brilliant Talmud Chacham. So the Chibina Rav once again over here doesn't let us down, and he has a brilliant insight where he writes, what kind of joke is this? So you put out the 10 pieces. Why? To save yourself from a bracha levatala. Then 5 minutes later you make your bracha and you go look around the house to find the pieces that you put out. What kind of search is that? It's a joke. So you're not even getting around the problem. What are you going to say? You're putting out the pieces in order to get out around the bracha levatala because now you're going to search for them? That's not called a search. That's called a joke. You put them on the table, you saw where you put it, you wrote it down, and now you're going to follow your list and pick up the pieces that you put down already. So the Chibina Rav can't understand, what are we helping ourselves, what are we saving anything by putting out the pieces and then going to find them, quote-unquote, by ourselves? Why does that help our problem at all? Listen to an unbelievable, brilliant shot from the Chibina Rav. He says, if you look in the Gemara itself, look at number Dalid, the Gemara comes to the conclusion, how do we know that you have to do Bedikas Chametz at all? How do we know you have to go around with a candle? Nowadays you should be very careful with a candle, maybe use a flashlight, it's just as good. So how do you know you should go around with a candle? Just parenthetically, people ask me every year, so what does your father do in the house? So what my father does, for those who are interested, he always takes a big Havdalah candle, or not a Havdalah candle, because you're not supposed to use an Avuka that has a lot. So he takes a candle that's steady, and he puts it onto a Leichter. He always walks into the room with the lights off, puts it on the table for a minute, leaves it on the table, but then he turns the lights on, or he walks around with a flashlight to really be able to check the room. Bedikas Chametz in my parents' house takes forever. It's not because they have the biggest house, but my father really takes it very seriously. But at the same time, it doesn't mean we should be irresponsible. We shouldn't go around with a candle and maybe burn our homes down. Every year we hear, unfortunately, about stories that people have fires that could have been saved. So this is something really to be very careful about. Even if you want to use a ner, even if you want to use a candle just to stick to the minig avoseinu, you should do what my father does. Leave the candle in a leichter that it shouldn't fall over, put it on the table, and don't walk around with it into all the corners of your house. You never know what's going to happen. You have to be very careful about that. So the Gemara says, Imsachim davzayin amid beis. How do we know that you have to use a candle? How do we know you should use a flashlight? Says the Gemara, you look in the middle here, for anyone who didn't follow that, say it 10 times fast. But basically, the Gemara has a very contracted understanding of how we know that you have to use a candle. Ultimately, says the Gemara, k'siv hacha. It says by Pesach, shivas yamim se'or lo yimatze bebateichem. For 7 days, you may not yimatze, you are not allowed to find any chametz in your home. Uksiv hasam, and it says over there, what's over there? What's over there? Vayechapes any bali kriya in the room? Vayechapes begadol hachel uvekaton kila vayimatze. Where is that?
That's in
Parshas Miketz. What's happening in Parshas Miketz? You're talking about the 10. 10 is maybe the brothers. 10 is maybe the brothers who sold Yosef. So over here, the Gemara learns the whole Bedikas Chametz is from the brothers selling Yosef. What happens? They sold Yosef. Now they go down to Mitzrayim. What happens in Mitzrayim? All the brothers go. Yosef tells them to go back. They don't know who he is yet. All of a sudden, the Avdei Paro come running after them and say, well, somebody stole the goblet of the king. Somebody has the silver cup of Yosef HaTzadik. Now they don't know it's Yosef yet. And they start searching through the bags. Meanwhile, they knew it wasn't Binyamin's bag. The whole thing was a setup. Says the Gemara, from here you see the word Vayimatze. We learn from there that you also have to do a bedika over here. Okay, whatever it is. Says the Chibina Rav. Why does the Gemara specifically choose that strange pasuk by Yosef and the brothers looking for the cup? You know why? Because the Avdei Paro are the ones who put it in the first place. And they come later on searching for it. And still the Gemara calls it Vayimatze. Still the pasuk says that's called a Metzia. That's called searching. And therefore, says the Chibina Rav, from here we learn that even if you're going to put out the pieces on your own, and you know exactly where they are, the same way the Avdei Paro put the cup into Binyamin's bag, they knew exactly where it was, and still, the Gemara calls that, the Pasuk calls that, a Metzia, calls that a Bedika, and therefore we learn from there, says the Chibina Rav, that even though now it looks like a joke, we're putting out the pieces of Chametz, we know exactly where it is, yet, we assume that this would be still called, considered a Bedika, that would still be called a Metzia when you actually find it, even though you knew where it was all along. So that's a, in my opinion, an absolutely brilliant insight that the Chibina Rav has. And it sheds a little bit of light on what it is that we do. Now let's extend our discussion to other times throughout the year and see whether this halacha that we find by Bedikas Chametz might have relevance or perhaps it's a little bit different. Take, for example, A Gemara in Brachos Daf Samach Amud Beis. That's number hey. Hanichnas lishon al mitaso. Somebody who is ready to go to sleep. Mevarech berachas hamapil chevle sheina al enai. So we have to say Kriyas Shema Lamita, and we have to say a bracha of hamapil. So the Rambam writes that even though the Gemara says hamapil chevle sheina me enai, still the Rambam says you have to say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam hamapil chevle. You don't just say Baruch hamapil chevle sheina. The Gemara is just saying the shortened version, but obviously you have to say it with Hashem's name also. Now, Del Yerabah has a problem. Del Yerabah is one of the commentators on Shulchan Aruch, one of the foremost commentators on Shulchan Aruch, and he says, well, how can you say a bracha of hamapil? Maybe you won't fall asleep. Maybe you won't fall asleep. So isn't that a bracha levatala? Okay, just take note. We're heading in the same direction as the problem we had by Bedikas Chametz. So over here, the El Yerabah doesn't understand. How could it be that we have no problem reciting a bracha on hamapil before we go to sleep? Maybe you won't fall asleep, then it's going to be a bracha levatala. And not only that, in fact, there's a very similar question that's discussed when it comes to the mitzvah of sleeping in the sukkah on Sukkos. When we sleep in the sukkah on Sukkos, we don't realize this, the same obligation that we have to eat in the sukkah, we also have to sleep in the sukkah. That's no less of an obligation. Now, the reason why many of us don't do so is because either it's dangerous, we live in a dangerous neighborhood, or because we don't, but some people do. Or maybe you'll say the reason why you don't sleep in the sukkah is because it's just not comfortable, and you're going to be too cold, and you're not going to be warm enough, and you're not going to be comfortable enough. So, whatever the reason might be, you might not be as careful to sleep in the sukkah, but really, strictly speaking, our obligation to sit in the sukkah is the same obligation to sleep in the sukkah as well. And the Tosas and Maseches Brachos Daf Yud Aleph, as well as the Rush, discuss the issue. Why don't we recite a bracha before going to sleep in the sukkah? Every time I go eat in the sukkah, we make a bracha, Leishe Basukkah. So how come you don't sit down before you go to sleep in the sukkah at night? You should also make a bracha. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kedishanu Mitzvoseh V'Tzivanu Lishon Basukkah. Very simple question. So there's two disparate opinions in the Tosas and Brachos Daf Yud Aleph. One opinion is that, well, the concern is maybe you won't fall asleep. So how can you make a bracha lishon basukkah? Maybe you won't fall asleep. And if you're not going to fall asleep, it's a bracha levatala. There's no concern that maybe you'll make a bracha lishon basukkah, then you won't eat. Nobody's ever going to think of such a thing. Everybody's going to eat. We're talking about Jews here. The only question is, maybe you won't fall asleep. So therefore, Tosfos says, how can I make a bracha lishon basukkah? Maybe you won't fall asleep, but it will turn out to be a bracha levatala. Oh, that's one opinion. The other opinion of Tosfos is exactly what you're saying. When I make the bracha leishe basukkah when I'm in there, it doesn't just mean to eat. It means to sit in here and to sleep in here and to do everything else that I'm doing here, to learn and to read a book and to do everything else that I'm doing. And therefore he says, we're covered. When we make the bracha leishe basukkah, we're covered for all the activities that we're going to do, we're going to perform in the sukkah throughout the duration of the day. Therefore there's no reason to make a new bracha of lishon basukkah before going to sleep. What you see here is, if not for that bracha that we make of leishe basukkah before we eat in the sukkah, Tosfos would have been of the opinion that, in fact, we should recite a bracha before going to sleep, and we're not concerned that maybe the person will not fall asleep. So this is two opinions in Tosfos. Should we say that, no, maybe you're concerned that the person will not fall asleep and it will be a bracha levatala, and therefore we shouldn't make a bracha? Or the other opinion is, no, we're not concerned about that. Now, if you assume, just think about this critically, if you assume that the reason we don't recite a bracha on sleeping in the sukkah is because maybe you won't fall asleep, well then how do you explain, why do we all make hamapil before we go to sleep at nights? Why do we make a bracha of hamapil before we go to sleep at night? Shouldn't that be the same thing? Maybe you won't fall asleep? Everyone following? So what's the difference? What's the difference between every night of the year when we're concerned, when we're not concerned, maybe you won't fall asleep, and we make a hamapil? There's no concern of bracha levatala. And all of a sudden on Sukkot we say, oh, no, 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 don't make a bracha before you go to sleep because maybe you're not going to fall asleep. What's the difference? So the El Yerabah wants to say it's a different kind of bracha. Before I go to sleep in the sukkah, I'm making a bracha on the activity that I'm about to do. So if that doesn't end up happening, that was a bracha levatala. But every night when I go to sleep and I make a hamapil chevle shena, I'm not making a bracha on my activity that I'm about to do of going to sleep. I'm making a bracha on minhaga shel olam, that the world goes to sleep at night, and we thank God for the ability to give us a chance to rest at night. Not for me per se, but for everybody. And therefore, even if I ultimately do not fall asleep, there's nothing to be concerned about. That's the answer that the El Yerabah gives. Now the Bir Halacha, the Mishnah Berurah, says, how is that an answer? Don't we know, let's say for those who stay up Shavuos night, you're not allowed to say the last bracha of Birchas HaShachar, which is Amavir Shena Me'enai, from my eyes. Why? Because we're not just making a bracha on Minhoga Shalolam. We're not just thanking God for waking everybody in the world up. It's a personalized bracha. Amavir Shena Me'enai, from my eyes. And therefore, if I stayed up the whole night, if I didn't sleep, I cannot recite that bracha in the morning. Well, similarly over here, says the Bir Halacha, what do I say? Hamapil Chevle Shena Al Einai, on my eyes, which means it's a personal bracha. It's not on Minhoga Shalolam. So how can this answer really be accepted? So this is a major problem. I did see a suggestion, perhaps. Take it or leave it. It is a suggestion. But perhaps you can assume like this. Perhaps the difference between sleeping in the sukkah and sleeping at night is the following. Ultimately, I know I'm still young, but ultimately, I believe everyone falls asleep at some point at night. So it might not be right now, but at some point you're going to fall asleep. So then we make hamapachev l'shena al einai, because not right now I'll fall asleep, but at some point I will, I hope. However, by sleeping in the sukkah, it might not pan out. Let's say you're tossing and turning, you're too hot, you're too cold, you're too this, too that. Ultimately, you might just go inside because you can't fall asleep. So there's a major difference. When I make the bracha hamapil chevle shena al einai, we're not concerned that maybe ultimately it won't pan out, because at some point in the middle of the night, you're going to fall asleep, so your bracha was good. But by the sukkah, by sleeping in the sukkah, we don't know that ultimately it's going to work out. And therefore, over there, we have a hesitation. And that's why by the mitzvah of sleeping in the sukkah, we prefer not to recite a bracha. Either way, however you reconcile the difference between hamapil chevle shena and the bracha on shina b'sukkah, sleeping in the sukkah, either way, the Vilna Gaon writes, when we talk about reciting the bracha on the bedikas chametz, and we're concerned, some say, maybe you should be concerned, maybe you're not going to find anything in its bracha levatela, says the Vilna Gaon, how come nobody bothered to bring a proof from the whole discussion by hamapil chevle shena? Why is that not brought into the conversation? Isn't this the very same issue? Maybe you won't fall asleep, maybe you will fall asleep, we should make a bracha, we shouldn't make a bracha, maybe we just make brachas because we're doing what we're doing, what ends up happening is not our problem, we're just doing what we're supposed to naturally be doing, but everything else is, let God figure it out, says the Vilna Gaon. I don't understand, how come that's not brought into the discussion? And that, I think, is something that's worth note of, that's worth thinking about. How does that play into this discussion over here about the mitzvah on bedikas chametz, if ultimately you might not find anything? There is one more example. There are many examples, but there is one example which is interesting. We have a mitzvah in the Torah, b'tzedek tishpat amisecha, which means we have an obligation to adjudicate, to arbitrate different cases when people have a disagreement for whatever it might be. We have to mediate the case. We have to make sure that we set up a bezdin and we figure out who's right and who's wrong, who has to pay what, and who is obligated to pay the other one. The question is, why do we not recite a bracha every time before we perform a din Torah? How come every time before the judges sit down, why don't we make a bracha? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosav Tzivanu Al Mitzvos B'Tzedek Tishpat Amisecha. It's a mitzvah like every other mitzvah. So why shouldn't we do that the same way we would make a bracha on everything else? So there are a couple of suggestions that are given. The Stechemed, which is an amazing encyclopedia that was written before we had computers. So the Stechemed writes, in the name of the Rokeach, that the reason why is because, look, the only time you could say a bracha, vitzivanu, asher kedishanu mitzvos vitzivanu, is when it's something that only the Jewish people, it's unique, it's particular to the Jewish people, this is why we're performing it. Meaning, before we eat matzah, we say asher kedishanu mitzvos vitzivanu. Nobody else other than the Jews is eating matzah. It's only because of our uniqueness, that's the reason why we recite a bracha, asher kedishanu b'mitzvos vitzivanu. You endowed us with such a high level of Kedusha, with such sanctity, therefore we go ahead and eat matzah, therefore we go ahead and eat mara, therefore we go ahead and blow shofar. That makes sense to say Kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu. But when you have something that Jews and non-Jews are obligated in equally, how can we say Kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu and therefore we're going to adjudicate a din Torah? That doesn't make sense. The non-Jews also have one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach as dinim. They also have an opportunity and an obligation to make sure that there's law and order in the land. So how can we say with a straight face, the reason why we're doing this is because we are endowed with such a Kedusha? It's not true. If we were not endowed with a Kedusha, we would do it as well. So that's the reason that some give as to why there is no bracha on making a din Torah. However, one of the most famous answers that's given is because the Rashba writes that, how can you make a bracha? Asher kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu al mitzvos b'tzedek tishpat amisecha. We thank God for giving us the opportunity to set up a din Torah, to set up a case, and that's something that we're so grateful for. How can we make a bracha? Shema lo yikablu balei hadin es hadin. We all know there are cases all the time where people go to a din Torah, and they're not happy with the psak. So they say, oh, we're not listening to the dayanim, and they move on. They go to someone else. Or they go to secular court. Now, sometimes they're right, because the din Torah was not done in an honest way, unfortunately. But many of the times they're wrong. So how, as a dayan, how can I sit down to a case and make a bracha? Asher kedushanu mitzvotav tzivanu, to do my best to judge it in Torah the right way, if ultimately, maybe, they won't accept the psak that I give. And it will turn out to be a bracha levatala. Now this is something that is very similar to our discussion as well. And the Pa'as HaShulchan, who was one of the foremost students of the Vilna Gaon, the Pa'as HaShulchan was one of the famous Talmidim who moved to Eretz Yisrael, Yisrael Mishklov. The Vilna Gaon had a whole movement that moved to Eretz Yisrael. He himself, for whatever reason, did not make it. But one of the Talmidim that went was Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov, and he moved to Tzvat. The question is, why did he move to Tzvat and not to Yerushalayim? Rabbi Menachem Mendel Mishklov moved to Yerushalayim, also one of the Talmidei Hagra. Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov moved to Tzvat, and that was a big controversy as to why he was there. He got attacked by Rabbi Menachem Mendel Mishklov. What are you living there? You're the one who's being ma'akev the geula because you're not coming to Yerushalayim, you're standing over there. Interesting story on the infighting that went on between the different Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon who thought they were the right ones. He claimed that the Vilna Gaon told him, go to Eretz Yisrael, go to Tzvat. Rabbi Menachem Mendel Mishklov swore that it's not true, that the Vilna Gaon said he got to go to Yerushalayim. So anyway, fascinating history there, but he wrote a sefer called Pa'as HaShulchan, which has a lot of halachas that are relevant to mitzvahs yishuv Eretz Yisrael. A lot of halachas about trumas and maizos and different things that are relevant only in Eretz Yisrael. So in the Pa'as HaShulchan, he points out that when we talk about this idea of making a bracha on performing a din Torah and doing it properly, we should also take into the account, into the equation that what about the fact that we make a bracha of hamapil, maybe we won't fall asleep. What about the fact that bekerah din we make a bracha on bedikas chametz, and maybe we won't find anything. So how does all that play in? You have to always figure out by each and every mitzvah, is it the same or is it not? So this is a very fascinating idea that we find throughout the year, throughout the calendar we have different opportunities and different variations of this very same discussion. Do we perform a mitzvah and do our best and make a bracha and whatever ends up happening, or do we say no? A person has to make sure that you are really guaranteed that the mitzvah is going to happen. If you're not guaranteed that the mitzvah is going to happen, a bracha cannot be recited. So, when we talk about the mitzvah bedikas chametz, I think there's a question that many of us think about, and it's not a question that we came up with. It's a question that is a very fundamental question about bedikas chametz, and there seems to be something strange about bedikas chametz more so than any other mitzvah in the Torah. And this is a question that's raised by the Kadmonim already, by the Radvaz. Look in the Radvaz number Vav. Says the Radvaz, Sha'alti mimenu, you asked of me the following, Odia chadaiti, you asked me to explain to you, Ma nishtana, so it's interesting he uses that terminology, obviously it's a play on the Ma nishtana, Ma nishtana chametz bepesach mikol isur in Shabbat Torah. Why is the isur of chametz on Pesach more serious than any mitzvah in the Torah? We know you're not allowed to eat treif. You're not allowed to eat basar b'chalav. Does it say anywhere you have to every night go search around your house with a flashlight, with a candle, and turn on the lights, make sure there's no basar b'chalav hiding under your bed? It doesn't say that anywhere. We have many isurim that you're not allowed to eat, and nowhere else do we find that you have to make sure to do a bedika to get rid of it, to eradicate it from your property. So why is it over here, shechmira alav ha-Torah, la-hatzricha bedika b'churin uvisdakin, that it says you have to check in all the nooks, all the little places, ulechapi sacharav, ulesharish or something called gulav, you have to totally destroy it. Not only that, we assume that if you have something in your possession that you didn't find, you violate a bayurabba, you matzei, a violation midaraisa. Va'asru b'kalshu, not only that, not only do we say you have to go and search after it, you have to do bedikas chametz, you have to do whatever you can, a bayurabba, you matzei, but Asru b'kolshu, even a mashu of chametz is already considered a violation of an issur d'oraisa. Ve'einam is batal klal. V'chumras ka'elu lo nimtzu b'chal isurin Shabbat Torah. Says the Radvaz, we don't find such an exaggeration by any other mitzvah observance, by any other performance that we have throughout the year. So what happened over here? What's so unique about bedikas chametz? What's so special about the issur of chametz on Pesach, more so than any other issur that we find in the Torah? So, he goes through a whole bunch of possibilities, and ultimately he writes the following, and it's a very fundamental idea. Hilkach, let's read the next line. Hilkach, adayin tzarach tam. You can give all the ideas in the world, but bottom line, I don't really understand why this is different, says the Radvaz. Va'al kein ani somech ha-masha amr chazal b'midrashus. Therefore, says the Radvaz, must be something deeper here. And what is that? Ki ha-chametz b'pesach remez li-yetzahara. Says the Radvaz, because the violation of chametz on Pesach is supposed to be some sort of reminder to our struggle with our Yetzirah, with our evil inclination, with our shortcomings. V'hu ha-sa'ar she-be'isa. What does that mean? The Sarsha B'Yisa means when you have the yeast in the dough that makes it rise, that's what makes something into chametz. And similarly, they say, the Chazal tell us that what makes a person violate an Avera is the Sarsha B'Yisa. Sometimes you have something rotten inside of you that makes you do something that you wouldn't have done otherwise. V'lachain, and therefore he says, since the experience of Bedikas Chametz and Bir Chametz is supposed to remind us of our experience with our struggle, of our own Yetzirah, of confronting our own shortcomings, V'lachain, therefore he says, Kala gareshi garesha soha adam me'alav. You must eradicate, eliminate, exterminate every single bit of that sa'or shabaisa that you have inside of you. Destroy it. V'yachapes v'chol machvos machshavosav. And we have to make sure that we check carefully in all of the deep confines of our mind, of our hearts. V'afilu kol shehu lo batal. Even if you have the slightest imperfection, you have to go after that as well. The Hareze MS Benachal, says the Radvaz. He's one of the first who writes this idea. The Zohar HaKadosh has it. I don't understand the Zohar, but the Radvaz brings it down a little more into our world. Says the Radvaz, the experience of Bedika and Bir Chametz is that we should remind ourselves of the opportunity that we have to look inside of ourselves and understand what our shortcomings are as well. It's the Sa'ar Shabbaisa. They say a story about one of the Vizhnitsa Rebbes. He was living in the late 1800s. I think his name was the Abbas Yisrael. They said the story about him that after he went through the whole exhaustive search in his home, and he's looking through all the different corners, all the different rooms in his house, and finally he turns to his Talmidim and he says, now we've looked through our entire house. He opens up his jacket and he says, now it's time to start looking inside here. Everybody open up and start looking inside of yourself. Now that we've finished the physical search, now it's time for us to do some soul searching and look, what are our shortcomings? What needs to be worked on? What can we take upon ourselves to make sure that we will perfect ourselves in the coming year, and we won't find the same problems this year as we have found last year? That's what the Vizhnitsa Rebbe taught his Hasidim. Now, one of the Hasidim was a wise guy, and he said back to him, well, the Gemara says, Makum Sheim Achnisim Chametz Ein Tzarech Bedika. So you don't have to look, because if the Gemara says, if you don't ever have Chametz go inside there, you don't have to check. So you're such a tzaddik, nothing went wrong. Okay, acute, wise guy, but the idea is very profound nonetheless. They say in the name of the Rav Shitzer Rebbe, one of the great Chassidish Rebbes as well, that it's a very overwhelming feeling for us to think about all of our imperfection and to think about all the shortcomings that we have. It's something that we all make mistakes, and we make mistakes daily. Everybody makes mistakes. Ain't tzadik baretz asher yaseh tov lo yechta. We all have a yetzer, we all have problems, and there's nobody who doesn't make mistakes throughout life and throughout their day. So how are we supposed to come to this overwhelming task of looking into all the mistakes that we have and try to perfect them? Isn't that a difficult thing? I can't really be a great tzaddik. Look what kind of life I'm living. So the Rav Shitzer Rebbe used to tell us Talmidim before Pesach. We say, Tchila l'mikrei kodesh, zecha l'yitzias Mitzrayim. This is something that we say in the Kiddush throughout the year. So he said, perhaps a chassidish pshat, what it means is, Tchila l'mikrei kodesh, the first step in trying to consider yourself a kadosh, the first step in trying to elevate yourself and try to get out of the rut that you're in is, Zecher liyitzias Mitzrayim. Remember the journey that the Jewish people had when they came out of Mitzrayim. What do we know about the Jewish people? We're told that they were on the Memtes Shari Tuma. They were the lowest of the low. We're not as bad as they were. They were doing everything wrong. God told them, had I not taken you out at this moment, that would have been the end of you. Memtes Shari Tuma, they were at the bottom of the barrel. And yet what happens 49 days later? Look how much they elevated themselves. Look how quickly they turned around, and look what a drastic and radical change they went through, a total metamorphosis where all of a sudden they come to Har Sinai, they're given the Torah, they are the Am Hashem, they're the Am HaNivchar, they experience the miracles that we've never experienced in the history of humanity. Look how quickly we can turn ourselves around. Look how much we can transform ourselves just if we want to. Tchila l'mikrei kodesh, if we want to have the beginning stages of an uphill battle of trying to become kedoshim, of trying to elevate ourselves and just become a little bit better, just zecher liyitzias Mitzrayim, just remind yourself of the experience that the Jewish people had when they came out of Mitzrayim. We're not having as much of a battle as they had. We're far greater than they were. And look how fast they turned around to become who they became. And therefore the Rav Shitzer said we can all have that experience as well. One of the Belzer Rebbes said, the second Belzer Rebbe in the mid-1800s, he pointed out, if you look in the first Mishnah Maseches Pesachim, which is the last entry on the source sheet. So we're told there about all the obligations that we have for our Bedikas Chametz, and how we're supposed to check the house, and what you're supposed to use, and which house, and what if I rent a house, what if I buy a house, what if I sell a house, all the different permutations about Bedikas Chametz. But the way the Mishnah starts off the whole obligation is very strange. What are we told? Ola Arba Asar, which means the night before Pesach, Erev Pesach, at night. Bodkin es hachametz. You have to be bodek the chametz. Now says the Belzer Rebbe, that's not the way I would have said it. I would have said, grammatically, or la arba asar, the night before Pesach, bodkin es habayis, you check your house, mipnei hachametz sheba, because there might be chametz scattered about throughout the house. So why do we say, or la arba asar, bodkin es hachametz, you're bodek the chametz? You're not bodek the chametz, you're bodek the house, because there might be chametz there. So why does the Mishnah use the wrong phraseology, the wrong term? Listen to an unbelievable mashal that the Belzer Rebbe said. He said, no, there were once two merchants, two vendors who went to the Yerid. They went to the town that was a few towns over, and there they were having a big market, a big show, and they were going to sell all their merchandise. And everything went flowing, everything was great. They sold out all their merchandise that they came with, and they collected all the money, and they put the money into the sacks. Instead of all the merchandise, now they have empty sacks, so they put the money in there, tons of coins and gold and everything. And they start making their trek back home. And as they're walking home, they realize it's so hot and they've been working so hard, they take a little rest. But the problem is, how can we take a rest? Someone's going to steal the sacks of money. How can we just rest over here? So they're going back and forth. Maybe you'll go to sleep and I'll stay up. Maybe I'll go to sleep, you'll stay up. They realize we really both need a rest. Otherwise, we're going to faint on our way home. So they decide, they go out way into the woods to a place where all they see is cows. And they figure they'll climb up a tree, hang up the satchel very high on the tree, and nothing's going to go wrong. There's nobody here. We're in the middle of the woods. All we have is cows. Nothing to be concerned about. So this is what happens. They go to sleep. What they didn't realize was that obviously if there are cows here, it means there must be a shepherd somewhere. So the shepherd is watching the whole thing, and he gets very excited. He sees that, you know, there are big satchels hanging on the top of the tree, and he sees that there are pouches full of money there. So he decides, I got to go steal it. So he quietly goes up to the tree after they fall asleep. He takes down the two pouches and he starts looking through. He sees he hit the jackpot. So he's concerned, what should I do? On the one hand, I was hired to watch these animals. So if I go run away to the city and leave the animals, the owner of the animals is going to be furious at me. So I can't risk that. It's not worth it. But if I go and ring the bells that it's time for the animals to leave, these guys are going to wake up. So what am I supposed to do? So he has a great idea. He takes out all the money. He empties the bags, hides it in the ground. And then he goes and he fills up the bags again with rocks that were the same weight as all the money was. And he goes, tiptoes back again, hangs up the bags back on the tree. A couple of hours go by, these guys wake up, and they're so excited to see that their bags are still there. It worked. The trick worked. So they go up to see to get the bags, and they're ready to go. And Rav Shila Belzer told the Hasidim that they stick their hand into the bags and say, hey, this doesn't feel like money. And they start looking around. They see somebody emptied out everything they had. They say to themselves, wow, this is the most amazing phenomenon we've ever seen. What a sensation. Have you ever seen cows that know how to climb up a tree? This town must be a very special town. We should really open a circus here. I mean, how can you have cows that can figure out how to exchange money for their rocks? So these guys, we would all believe, are absolute imbeciles. They're such fools. But says the Belzer Rebbe, why are they fools? They're fools because all they're looking at is the consequence at the outcome and trying to figure out what do we do now and what a sensation it is. And they don't bother to think about the cause or the root, the source of the problem. How is it possible? Just think, go one extra step and think about how did this happen? You know good and well that a cow can't run up a tree and get down a bag and put it back up and fill it up. It's impossible. So if you would only think about the root of the issue, you would understand that obviously there's somebody in the vicinity here who played a fast one on you. And you would know right away how to get down to the crux of the issue. This, said the Belzer Rebbe, is what the Mishnah means when it says, Orla arba asar, bodken es hachametz. Not only do we look around and find all of the imperfections that we have inside of us, but once you find it, once you identify what it is, you have to make sure to not only isolate the problem, not only identify it, but to make sure that you scrutinize and inspect the problem. You have to probe it and figure out, how did I get there? How is it possible that I made such a mistake? Bodken es hachametz, take that piece of chametz that you find, that imperfection, and figure out, how did it get there? How is it possible that somebody like me made such a mistake? Bodken es hachametz, you have to carefully look at what instigated the problem. You have to figure out what it is that brought about all the issues that you're facing and all the challenges that you have. They didn't come from nowhere. And that's what the Belzer Rebbe explains. That's why the Mishnah tells us bodken es hachametz, because it's not good enough to look around your house for the chametz and identify it. Once you identify the problem, you have to figure out the root of the problem. You have to figure out how it is that this came about. And that, says the Belzer Rebbe, is an opportunity that we have every year on the time of Bedikas Chametz to think about not only the imperfections that we should be purifying, that we should be perfecting, But also it's an opportunity to look at the crux of the issue at the core and figure out how it is that we made that mistake and what steps are we going to take to make sure we won't make that mistake again. A beautiful insight of the Belzer Rebbe. We spoke tonight about putting out the 10 pieces of chametz and the Chabina Rav about how exactly that can be called a Bedikas Chametz when you're not really looking for anything. You know that it's there. Rav Asher Weiss once told me an incredible insight, and he said, yeah, the Radvaz says it's a joke, the whole Bedikas Chametz is a joke. You know, how do we understand that? The Radvaz gives an explanation. He explains it to us. And we said, isn't it a joke that we put out the pieces of chametz, we know where they are? So Rav Asher Weiss told me maybe the symbolism here is the very same. That very often we try to identify problems that we have, we like to point fingers at other people. And we like to say, oh, I tripped up in this mistake because of that person or because of the other one. And Rav Asher Weiss told me perhaps the reason we put out the 10 pieces of chametz is to remind ourselves that we are responsible adults. And so often we bring about our own problems. We exacerbate our own problems. We're the ones who put the chametz there in the first place. We put ourselves in situations where we might have the issue that we face. It's not always somebody else's fault. Very often it's our obligation to point a finger at ourselves and say, I was the one who put the chametz out. I was the one who created this problem. And therefore I'm the one who has to get myself out of it. That perhaps is an idea that we have also an opportunity to think about. How much of our problems are brought about by other people, by outside factors, and how much is it our own responsibility? How much do we expect ourselves to really own up to our own issues and to really recognize and feel responsible for the shortcomings that we all have? The Rashi does tell us, right before Purim, we learn about Amalek. On Purim and before Purim, we have Parshas Amalek. And there's a very interesting phenomenon that Rashi, when it talks about the issue of Amalek starting up, having the battle with the Jewish people, so Rashi writes two different Mishalim. The story of Amalek comes up in Parshas Kisetze and also in Parshas Beshalach. In Parshas Kisetze, Rashi tells us that the audacity, the defiance of Amalek, the presumptuousness that they came along, when everybody saw the greatness of the Jewish people, they had just been taken out of Mitzrayim, everybody was afraid to touch them, nobody was willing to get near them. And Rashi says, all they needed was one person to jump on and start up with the Jewish people, like an ambatio rosachas, Rashi says. It's like a burning hot, scorching hot bath where there's smoke coming out of it, and everybody's afraid to get involved. Everybody thinks it's too hot. All you need is one person to jump in. Once the one person jumps in, then everybody else jumps in also. That, Rashi explains, is exactly the way we describe Amalek. Everybody was afraid. Jewish people were like a burning hot torch. They were so hot. Nobody wanted to touch them. Everybody was so in awe, inspired by the Jewish people. All you needed was the audacity of Amalek. And once Amalek jumped in, now everybody else felt that they can also win the Jewish people. They can also begin a battle and a war fighting against the Jewish people, even though we're so afraid of them, because Amalek cooled off the bath, so to speak. That's the mashal that Rashi gives in Parshas Kisetze. However, Rashi in Parshas Beshalach gives a very different mashal. Rashi in Parshas Beshalach says that there's a mashal to a boy who's riding on his father's shoulders because he was walking with his father and there was a dog and he was afraid. So the father says, okay, come onto my shoulders. So he's riding on the shoulders, and when you're on the shoulders of a giant, you can see further than the person underneath you. So the child looks around and he sees that there's a candy store, and he says to the father, would you mind buying me a lollipop? He says, sure. The father goes in, buys him a lollipop, hands it up to the son. A few stores later, he passes by another store. He says, oh, can you buy me some potato chips? Can you get me a pizza? Can you get me an ice cream? Everything. The father's giving him everything, all the treats. It's amazing. A couple of minutes go by, and the son sees somebody walking on the street. He says, I beg your pardon. Do you have any idea where my father is? I've been looking for him. The father takes him, he throws him off his shoulder. He says, what a chutzpah of you. I don't understand. I've been providing you the ice cream, the pizza, the lollipops, the everything you wanted. I'm saving you from the dogs. Now you're asking, where's your father? Don't you realize your father's the one who's carrying you? And this, says Rashi, is the same experience that the Jewish people had. God provides them with everything. He gives them everything. He gives them Esther Marcus. He gives them Kriyas Yamsuf. All of a sudden they go and they ask, Hayesh Hashem or Kibu, am I after all that I've done? You ask, is God actually here? How can you say such a thing? And that, Rashi says, is why Amalek came to start up with us. Why do we need two different Mishalim? Why do we need two different Mishalim? To explain the very same story about Amalek confronting the Jewish people and starting a battle. So on a different occasion, Rav Asher Weiss told me perhaps the idea is, because it's very easy for us to point fingers and say, oh, look at the presumptuousness of Amalek. Look at them, they started up. That's why we have all our problems, and this is the issue. But Rashi tells us first, look at yourself. The problem with Amalek really started because you were like that child who's on top of the father's shoulders and fails to recognize how much kindness the father provides for you. Don't always be so quick to point a finger and say, the problem lies in somebody else. what we learn from the two Mishalim of Amalek is, yes, sometimes it might be somebody else's fault, but within somebody else's fault, there's also a lot that's my fault. And that's the first Mashal that Rashi quotes. That we always have to remember, we were like that child who was so ungrateful. And this is why God punished us. It wasn't only because Amalek was so brazen to start up with the Jewish people. It was also because the Jewish people failed to recognize the kindnesses of God throughout their lives. This is what we find as well. Yonah. Imagine, God forbid, you're on a plane and the plane starts going down. And you're on a plane with everybody who's over the Avodah Zarah, Gidei Arayos, Shvichas Dam, terrible people. You're the only God-fearing Jew on the plane. And the plane starts going down. Wouldn't you look around and say, excuse me, guys, perhaps this is happening because of the lifestyle that all of you live. That's exactly what happened by Yonah. Yonah's boat starts sinking, and the boat is about to capsize. They don't know what's going to be. And all the people on the boat are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the lowlives of the world. And yet, what is Yonah's response? B'shali hasar hazeh. All of this problem is because of me. The most obvious thing to do would have been to point the finger at everyone else and say, look what you're doing, look what happened. But no. A responsible Jew says, we point the finger at ourselves. Botken es ha-chametz. We put out the 10 pieces of chametz because we realize that so often we are the ones who are solely responsible for our own problems, for our own shortcomings, for our own failings. This is what our opportunity of Bedikas Chametz is all about. It's to remind ourselves of the imperfections that we all have, the Se'or Shebe'isa that lays inside of us. And to not only eradicate it, not only to destroy it, not only to make sure we don't even have a mashahu of those issues, but also to think about what it is, what was the impetus for the mistake in the first place, to be bodek es hachametz, to think about how we scrutinizing the mistake and making sure that we don't make that mistake again. What perfections are we taking upon ourselves? What implications are we going to have for the year that comes ahead to make sure that we don't make the same mistakes as last year? And to always remind ourselves as well that tchila lemikrei kodesh, the way that we can always enthuse ourselves about going on the journey of becoming kedoshim, of becoming good, God-fearing Jews, is zechel Yitzias Mitzrayim, to remind ourselves of the state that the Jewish people were in at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and look how quickly they turned about. Look how quickly they were able to turn around and become the nation, the Am Hashem, who was worthy of accepting the Torah. Okay? Wish everyone a...